Your weekend's here. Thanks for spending some of it with Ken on CJAD 800.
Yeah, Dad was Greatest Generation. He wanted for me to have a bedrock life, and he felt that being a movie director was a pipe dream. It was going to be like quicksand.
We're going to use Daddy's camera to film it.
Whereas my mom said, go for it. Just go for it, Steve.
Let's not tell your father. It'll be our secret movie, just yours and mine.
8:40 on the button. Bill Brown seems on the line. Bill, that was Steven Spielberg talking about his parents and, of course, the new movie that's very personal for him, The Fabelmans.
Very personal. It's his life story, his early life story. It's a phenomenal film. It's the last thing you would have expected. When you look at the Steven Spielberg, when I've spoken to him, I've met him on occasion, and he is like a straight shooter. He looks like he came from a very, how shall I say, just a very ordinary middle-class kind of family, and he was always driven by movies and all the rest, but you wouldn't have assumed that there would have been much controversy in his life, a lot of strange behavior and all the rest, and yet, this is what we see in this film, which he directed. It's his early life. His dad was some kind of early computer brainiac working for GE. They lived on the East Coast. His mom, Mitzi Fabelman, the dad's played by a guy called Paul Dano, who's terrific. His mom, Mitzi Fabelman, played by an extraordinary Michelle Williams. She was a pianist, and she had desires of making it professionally, but the family had to move with the dad when they moved to Arizona and then later on to Northern California. And you see much dysfunction, family instability, through no fault of either, really. I mean, the mother had dreams, the father had his dreams, and in the middle is Stephen with three sisters, and he's kind of left to his own devices, too, and he started getting into making Super 8 movies as very young, like 12 years old. The kid was already a genius there, but the family dysfunction started to grow and grow, and in the midst of all of this is an Uncle Benny, who is the father's best friend, and the mother had a played by Seth Rogen, and unusual casting here because he doesn't even look like Seth Rogen at the beginning, and this kind of tears the family apart, and there's a lot of very, very serious issues, especially when the family moves to Northern California, not L.A., where the young Fabelman, his name was Sam Fabelman in the film, had to do a lot of anti-Semitism because he was the only Jewish kid around, and he grew up with all these, you know, beach blanket bingo type hunky guys who love nothing more than to torment, and you see a very, very painful upbringing, the kind of which if you spoke or seen Spielberg in interviews, you never would have guessed. You would have assumed he always fit right in and never had to deal with anything like this, and certainly not like trying to be a mediating force between his parents, but yet that's what you see here, and it's very, very well done.
Playing in Town.
Yes, sir.
All right. The Fabelmans, Steven Spielberg's latest. You know, Paul Dano, you just mentioned, I know this guy a bit. I first saw him. He was, I think, the son in Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah. Terrific actor as well, and like against type, usually a very nasty kind of guy. He's played like racist redneck types. He's played bad guys. He's played kidnappers and all the rest. I've never seen him cast in a nerdy kind of role like this, which is complete opposite, but credit Spielberg for seeing something in him and turning him into something else.
That guy, Dano, he also played Brian Wilson in Love and Mercy.
Correct.
Yeah. He's a terrific actor.
Not so much heroic or anti-heroic, but certainly never like this. And in the like Seth Rogen, you've never seen quite like this. And then in the midst of this, Judd Hirsch, who pops up as the mother's Mitzi Fabelman's uncle, who's like twisted beyond belief. And David Lynch shows up. Some really intriguing casting choices there. But Spielberg, man, he really knows how to put together a film and put together actors. Really, this one's going to be up there come awards time. I'd be really shocked if Michelle Williams didn't get consideration for Best Actress.
All right, 8:45. Let's move on to our friend Bryan Cranston.
Yes?
I'm offering you a chance to atone for what you have done, to help bring down the single greatest threat to New Orleans.
I can't do this. There are memories that I just can't bear.
Who do you think you're talking to? Have I given you the impression that any of this is optional?
If you are a fan of Your Honor, starring Bryan Cranston, you have some news on season two.
Yeah, I mean, for those who didn't take in season one, which I thought was unbelievable, Bryan Cranston playing a judge who gets severely compromised because his son gets involved in a hit-and-run accident, and all hell breaks loose, and Bryan Cranston, as a judge, tries to cover things up, but not too easily because there are some nefarious forces out there. Anyway, there is a season two, which a lot of us have been really waiting for. It was supposed to start December 11th on Showtime, and it's been pushed to January the 15th, but apparently this is the last season. This will be the second and final season for it, but Bryan Cranston, I mean, is there anybody better out there doing this kind of role, especially morally ambiguous characters, Ken?
And to think he started as the, what, he was the dentist on Seinfeld?
The dentist who converted to Judaism for the joke's sake. I'll never forget that one. Yeah. And all sorts of, like, just fairly banal sitcoms when starting out, and then he's turned into the powerhouse that he is today.
All right, speaking of powerhouses and vocalists, Mariah Carey involved in a bit of a brouhaha. What was this about her performance at the Macy's Parade?
Right, I find this absolutely hysterical. Turns out that she was caught lip-syncing. Of course she was lip-syncing. Anybody on a float in a Macy's Day Parade will be lip-syncing because it's impossible to, like, technically put together as you're moving through traffic, all the rest, to, like, to get the actual sound going. And you know, everybody who's ever performed pretty much has to have lip-synced to do it. John Legend came out and said, hey, I mean, I was doing it too. And the fact of the matter is, two things. I mean, first, I mean, Mariah Carey knows how to sing, so it's not as...
It's not Milli Vanilli.
Exactly. And this, you're not paying for a ticket, you know, at a, like, Madison Square Gardens here. You're seeing something for free on streets. She's dancing, she's lip-syncing, she's going through all the motions, but it's absolutely impossible to do so. But it's like somebody, like some people tweaked to the fact that she wasn't doing, like, live performance here and got all upset.
I don't want to burst anyone's bubble, but Ferris Bueller was lip-syncing, too, in that parade scene.
Right. Absolutely. Sometimes lip-syncing could be better for a performer. But nonetheless, anyway, people are trying to get the skeptics calm down. She has nothing to prove on that front.
And one more quick one. Bob Dylan and this whole thing about the signature on his book.
God, that's so strange. Bob Dylan came out with a book called The Philosophy of Modern Song, which sounds very heavy, and for $600 you could get it autographed, which is, you know, quite above the price of what the book was selling for. But then it turns out these were replica autographs done by some sort of laser gizmo and all the rest.
Machine-generated, right?
Yeah. Machine-generated. Like, so the 900, he sold 900 books like this, and then people discovered that this wasn't the real Bob Dylan. Well, it wasn't him, like, actually taking the time to sign books. And Simon & Schuster has given back money to those 900 people who paid $600 for it. But I find that's kind of bizarre. For years and years, this has been going on. I mean, Margaret Atwood actually developed a system many years back where she actually did it from afar, but it wasn't quite the same as this. It was pretty much her signature, but she had a little gizmo with her that without going through the motions all the time, because, you know, writers have very sensitive hands.
Of course. You know that from signing your books.
Yeah, absolutely. But this one was, you know, beyond the pill. And like Dylan, I mean, people were surprised because of all people. I figure, well, this guy, I mean, can't be that interested in money. I mean, he's Bob Dylan. He's a poet. You know, why would he be doing this? But good news for you people. They're all in it for a few extra bucks.
Once upon a time, I used to sell my own books.
Exactly.
Bill, we'll chat tomorrow.
You bet.
Bill Brownstein from the Montreal Gazette. It's 8:49. Celebrations and Terry Mosher coming up next.